Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
To inform, inspire, and empower Alcoholics Anonymous sponsorship, locally and internationally, to be their very best, both personally and spiritually. This is the mission of RumRadio.org, an internet radio program dedicated to carrying the message of recovery to a world plagued by alcoholism and addiction. Alcoholism and addiction is the number one health issue in our world today, and RumRadio.org is actively participating in the solution. Interviews with a plethora of people sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Live Sundays at 9 p.m. Central Time and rewound again on Saturday and Monday. Tune in to 12-Stepology at its best on RumRadio.org.
Thanks, Mom. That's Mom and Dad. My dad came up today, the two of them make it really good. That's it. There's only just two people in the audience, but they really love their son. Hello and welcome. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and RumRadio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. And the GSO, which is the General Service Organization of Alcoholics Anonymous, not the KGB, but the GSO through the auspices of the Grapevine, which is our monthly magazine. We call that our meeting in print, have put together a sponsorship book, first time in 78 years. Mine just came yesterday. It's called One-on-One Sponsorship. To some folks, that might not be a big deal, but it's just closed down the unknown universe a little bit. Sponsorship is coming back to the forefront. As a matter of fact, some of you know, there's a fella in the program called Clancy I. He's been around forever. He's old as dirt, in his 80s now, really quite the cantankerous old fella, but he's got a great program. He's helped thousands of people in recovery. And he had mentioned, and I got through this through the grapevine mill, is that he's seeing pockets of sponsorship coming up like mushrooms in different parts of the AA landscape. So I think we're making a difference out there. We're going to go, it's more of a back-to-basics format. So this is kind of exciting for us. Now we have a Avis to R. Hertz, a Macy's to R. Gimbel. So we know that we're on the right track, guys. Let me tell you, this is kind of exciting. I'd like to acknowledge WNAH, that's Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Alabama. And they do this for us as a public service presentation. We also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. And, of course, I'd like to gratefully introduce my co-host, Harold B. Harold's a family intervention specialist. He does a fine work with troubled families, and I personally believe that families are the basic unit of our society, and as the family goes, so does the country, so does the nation, so does the world. Most of the problems we have in our society today are children who grew up, latchkey kids, without not being taught correct principles. Nobody was home. They went to the groups, they went to the clubs, they went to the gangs, and that's how they learned life. So drugs are part of that. When you go to the prisons, Harold goes to the prisons with Celebrate. He's with Celebrate Recovery. He goes to the prisons and he brings the message of recovery. Most of the folks in the prison are there because of drugs and alcohol. The career criminal, not so much. They're not that big of a deal. I mean, it's annoying with that they're there. Some folks have just decided to make a profession out of it. But for the vast majority, are crimes of opportunity fueled by drugs and alcohol. So this is a epidemic of dilemma of social standing. It really hurts. And what we try to do is, Harold's like a starfish thrower. It's like a red tide comes in and millions of starfish are on the beach. This fella's out there and he's picking up a starfish and he's tossing them back into the water and to life. And another guy comes along and he says, you know, there's millions of them here. You know, you're only going to save a few. He says, that's all I can do. I can save the ones I can save. And that's what Harold does. It's really a tough job, but I know he can do it. Harold, tell us hello.
Well, hello, everybody. It's an honor to be here, and thank you for that nice introduction, Joseph. I just wanted to mention a couple of things. The families I work with, over 50% of them, the root of the problem is an addiction of some kind, alcohol, drugs, and often people switch addictions when they're trying to struggle with their addiction and with recovery. Sometimes they switch addictions. 50% of the marriages, of course, end in divorce. 50% of the divorces involve sex addiction or porn addiction. And so I'm just seeing a gigantic increase in that type of problem. Now, the 12 steps work as a solution no matter what the addiction is, whether it's food, gambling, sex, alcohol, drugs, or talking too much. That's called on and on anon. So
on and on anonymous, is that what it is?
On and on anonymous. So anyway, I'd just like to tell the listeners that this is not a money making operation. We intend to help people by emphasizing recovery, by working with others. Sponsorship, and in Celebrate Recovery, it's called an accountability partner. Also in Sex Addicts Anonymous, it's called an accountability partner. But intensive work with another person is really the key to this whole thing, serving. And when we're serving others, we're also serving God. And Joseph and I do not make money from this endeavor. In fact, Joseph has invested thousands of his own dollars in establishing the website, rumradio.org, and the radio program. There's a constant cost with that, and he shoulders those burdens by himself. So I want to acknowledge that, and want to encourage everyone to click on his messages and click the like button and click the comment button and make comments. And give him a little encouragement, because it's pretty lonely out there. Although there is a new book published by The Grapevine about this very topic, working with others. I'll let Joseph mention that later. So back to you, Joseph.
Thank you, Harold. It's one-on-one sponsorship. You can get it at The Grapevine. You can either write to them, or you can go on web. Everybody's got the internet just about anymore. You can go in. $10.99 shipping, handling, about $17. And if nothing else, you're supporting The Grapevine. Now, having said that,
let me mention one more thing. I have the chat room open. So, folks, if you'd like to, you can go to rumradio.org, click on the live button in the upper right, go to the Blog Talk Radio site, get on our chat room. And we can you can type your questions for today's interviewee.
Well, thank you, Harold. Or you can call in. We have a call-in number also. It's 949-534-0621. Again, 949-534-0621. And in New Jersey, it's 949-534-0621. So call in. Have any questions or comments, we'd like to hear from you. Otherwise, sit back, relax, and take in the information. We have a really special guest tonight. I do the way I work my interview list, it's people I come across, some people of note, because they have better jokes. and then I do the average Joe in recovery, because who can put a yardstick on a miracle? And you never know for sure, but we have a Tom R. Tom R. has just recently written a book, Prayer and Meditation, A Practical Guide to Life Promised in Step 11, Tom R. Say hello, Tom.
Hello, everyone.
We're going to get back to you in just a minute. I'd like to start the show with the third step prayer. I think it's a good thing. It's a nice feeling to start. We start most of our meetings with a prayer. It's called an invocation, inviting in the spirit. And we close our meetings with a prayer, which is called a benediction. And the meetings in recovery are usually gratitude meetings. And I believe an attitude of gratitude is a prayer unto God. Oh, and the disclaimer is this is not AA. This is not NA. This is not CA. This is Rum Radio. We're probably closest to Paranoids Anonymous, but nobody will tell you where they're holding meetings. And if you make the whole hour or so that we were on the show, you might think it's Narcoleptics Anonymous. But it's we're not AA, you know. But although we do use a lot of the information found in the basic text of AA, which is called the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, all 12 and 12 programs derive from the information found in that book. Now, everybody tweaks it a little bit, or they change it up a little bit, but basically it's coming out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, or the 12 and 12, which came out a little later, an understanding of practical experience derived from using the Big Book, which we find to be an understanding that works well as long as we keep to the understanding that's in there. The alcoholic and the addict were all quite unique and special and different. So everybody works their own program. Everybody's got a twist of doing something. So having fundamental, foundational information is we use the Big Book and the 12 and 12, primarily the Big Book. And so this, anything that disagrees with that, we find usually causes a problem. If we stick to the program as outlined, it usually works really well. We have a preamble. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. There are those that are constitutionally incapable of being honest. They're not at fault. They seem to have been blonde that way. There's some folks that just don't want to get it. They can't get it. We don't judge them for that, but we find that rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. And the key word is thoroughly followed our path. And it's outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why we use the Big Book as the template of all recovery. And when I get a new sponsee, that's where the third step prayer comes in. I get a new sponsee. The Big Book tells us, go find a prospect and start working on them. Really don't expect someone who just walks in and has no idea of the culture, the jargon, the way we do things, what a sponsor is, what a beginner's chip is, or any of that. He doesn't know anything, or she doesn't know anything. All she knows is either the judge has told her she's got to go, or she's going to jail, or he's going to jail, or they're in enough pain that they had to find we call it the last house on the block. So they walk into the doors with the idea that, you know what, these folks just might have an answer. I got a problem. They're realizing I got a problem and I'm in search of an answer. And they walk in, they don't know anything. And this is why the old timers, and this is why the Big Book says, go find the prospect and start working on them. You have to do that. That's the most efficient way. You got to bring them along. This way they get to feel a part of instead of apart from. And they don't languish in the meetings. They get right into working the 12 steps. We find that to be the most productive way of working this program and getting it right away and then giving it back, get them into the trenches working with the next sufferer. So I have the guy comes in, he gets his beginner's chip. I like that. Now, Big Book says, you know, they used to go to Skid Row and they used to go to the hospitals and they would warm up. They had to warm up the prospect like a sales call, and that's what a prospect is. Someone who has a good chance of successful recovery, it's a prospect. It's a sales term. I'm going to sell him an idea that there's a better way of life. He doesn't have to die. There is a way out. This is what we're selling. Hope. That's the commodity we sell in AA, NA, and CA. We sell hope to the sufferer. And so I grabbed the guy after he got his chip. He got up. He took his walk up there, and that took a lot of nerve. Hopefully he might even had the opportunity to say he was an alcoholic or an addict. Maybe not, but he got his chip. He got a desire chip. It's an outward sign of an inward commitment to try our way of life for 24 hours. That's it. We don't ask for a lot. Let's get started. Journey of 1,000 miles begins with the beginner's chip. After the close, we have a prayer, and we're holding hands, and I turn around after the prayer, and I ask the fella, and we believe it's men with men and women with women. It's easier to relate to the same gender. Sponsorship is a fairly intimate relationship. Intimacy was the ability to share one's reality without fear of judgment or change. And that intimacy could be misconstrued. Sex changes everything. So usually, if possible, we go same gender. If that's not going to work, or there's another situation where it's more convenient not to, you know, it's okay. Work the steps. Because if it's not working, you can always change sponsors. Whoa. But we like to keep it that way. It makes it, why add another hoop to the mess? We got enough work to do as it is. So then I give them, you need a home group. This is a first suggestion. These are all suggestions. A suggestion is a subtle command. I like to think of it like you have just jumped out of a plane with your sponsor, and your sponsor says, look, you can pull the ripcord. That's just a suggestion. It's in your hand, Chief. Pull it or not to pull, that's your deal. And that's what we give them, suggestions. The suggestion is you get a home group, and in that home group, you find a lifeline. You get 20 or 30 men's names or women's names, depending. And this way you have a lifeline and a home group now you can start connecting up with. This is going to be in case you're out of town or your sponsor's not available. I want you to get as many names as you can and get permission for them to call, for you to call them. And then every day for the next 30 days, I want you to call a different man on the list, a woman, women, and ask permission to recite the third step prayer. Third step prayer is also called a surrender prayer. And the reason I have them do that is to get used to picking up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help. It connects them up with their home group. They get to know his name, and he gets to know their name. And, of course, the surrender prayer is going to accomplish what we're going to try to accomplish by working all 12 steps. And fourthly, the person they're calling might have been thinking about taking his first drink, his first hit of crack, whatever it is, and the chances are he will not. So your sponsor is already into service work, which is the key we find to long-term, to attaining and maintaining long-term sobriety in recovery. And this is the prayer. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thy wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen. Amen.
Thank you, guys. If some people don't like it because it's not in there, the word blonde is not in there, but, you know, look, it's Rule 62. Don't take yourself so seriously. Oscar Wilde said, life was much too important to take seriously, and I believe that's true. If you got them laughing, you got them listening. So, Tom, you wrote a book, Prayer and Meditation. Before we get into the book, I want to know about you. I want to know about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And then I want to get into a little bit about the Prayer and Meditation. It's a great book. I've been going through it. Very interesting, a lot of great information. But tell us who you are and how you came about. When did you first find out that you might have had a problem, or how old were you when you first found that drink that made you feel like Superman?
Well, thanks, Joseph and Harold. I was in junior high school, and let me give a little more background. My father was an alcoholic. I'm one of four boys, all alcoholic or addicted. And my mom was an orphan. She was raised in an orphanage. And so not a lot of healthy background and instruction in how to parent. And even though my mom was probably the most loving person I've ever met. But I grew up in the 60s, and the 60s was a time of where drugs were becoming popular. Alcohol was more accessible, of course, and promiscuity, too. So I just dove headfirst into all that. Even though my dad was in AA and sober, he was sober 31 years when he died. But I never heard anything about AA from him. And so I started drinking junior high school, and then around high school time, I started taking drugs. I took smoked marijuana, dropped LSD, a lot of it, until I couldn't anymore. Every time I would take LSD or marijuana, I'd have a bad experience. And so I grew up in Seattle around the University of Washington, and that was where the drug culture in Seattle was. And so the people in that culture, I wasn't cool in school, and so I looked for acceptance in the drug culture, and the people that were at the top of that food chain were pretty heavy-duty drug addicts, mostly heroin. And so I began to experiment with drugs, at heroin, IV drug use, and became addicted fairly early on. And then to support my habit, I started selling large quantities of drugs. And kind of an entrepreneur, I had some people working for me. And then I was also a musician. In 1973, I was doing a demo for Warner Brothers Records, and I assembled a group of musicians in Seattle that I really admired. And so we would record parts of this demo in my basement where I had a studio. And after everybody would leave, this one fellow that would stick around, and he knew that I was pretty messed up, pretty desperate. And he had a spiritual experience a couple years before that. And one day I just really opened my heart to him and told him that I wanted to change. I didn't know how to change. And so he led me into a spiritual experience. Now, this wasn't AA or NA or CA. This was just me and him and God. At the time I had, this is 1973, I had a $2,000 to $3,000 a week drug habit. And he led me in a little prayer, and I was completely free of the desire for drugs and the withdrawal that I came to get used to whenever I would come off of heroin addiction. So so he took me to a little church, and I started going there, and I was clean and sober for 8 years, and then I hurt my back 3 times in a week and ended up going into the hospital, being in traction, and started getting painkillers. And it took about a year before I was addicted again. And even though my doctors knew that my history as a drug addict, they just didn't connect it to legal narcotics. So for the next few years, I tried to get sober and didn't have any success doing it. So my experience with God was genuine, but I didn't have the structure that I later found in AA to do this one day at a time. So about 1986, in and out of trying to get sober on my own, and I went to my first treatment center, the first of 7 treatment centers. And again, this was in Houston, Texas, when I first tried to get sober. And then I moved back to Seattle, went to my first treatment center. And but I couldn't find people would tell me, just go to 90 meetings in 90 days and don't yeah. drink and go to meetings. And I just started thinking, Jesus.
Oh, gosh.
You know, don't drink That's between meetings.
That's close
right?
That
meetings.
Was at the pub. Was that the post
office?
That was their mantra when I walked in. Yeah, A, B, and C they had. Don't drink, go to meetings, repeat A and B.
I thought, man, if I could not drink between meetings, why would I go to these dumb meetings? So, but the thing my first sponsor in Houston, Texas, did give me, I just recently connected with him after 25 years, he didn't know to take me through the steps, but he did love on me, and he did the very thing that you said the purpose of the program is, this program, and that's he gave me hope. He believed in me. He said, I know you want to get sober. I don't know why you can't. So for 18 years, I went in and out of AA, and I never had several sponsors, and only one of them had a clue about the steps. And so I just couldn't get any traction with it. And adding to that, I already had a relationship, a connection to God that I tried to foster, which was pretty hard to do when I'm out in addiction. But it was so frustrating, and it was embarrassing and shameful and all that stuff. And then it cost me my marriage, my relationship with my kids, all that stuff. And then finally, my last treatment center, seventh treatment center, I knew this treatment center had an excellent staff, people that all went through the steps, really understood the deal. And so I knew for the first time that I needed to find somebody who understood the steps and could take me through them. And but, you know, at the same time, my pickers broke. So I feel like God really had to have pity on me to direct me to a sponsor. I was in treatment for 30 days. I asked 3 people to be my sponsor during that time who came in from the outside, and all of them flaked out. And then finally, in the last couple of days before I'm getting out, and I've really got no place to go, a guy comes in from the outside on a Saturday morning, and he tells his story. And I knew this was the guy. This guy, it says, when we were approached by someone in whom the problem had been solved. So, but after he got done speaking, even though I knew this was the guy, I only had a couple of days before I got out of treatment, and I felt I really needed to connect to somebody before that. I didn't go up and talk to him after the meeting, because after realizing this was the guy, my next thought is, why would a guy like that want to help a guy like me?
Good point.
So a day goes by, and now it's the day before I get out, and I went to see the counselor who had brought this guy in from the outside, and I said, could you please give me his name and number? And so I called him, and I asked him if he would help me, and he said he would.
Wow, great.
And so, but for the first time in my adult life, I didn't have a car, and I didn't have my own place. I moved into an Oxford house. And he lives 35 miles outside of Seattle. And so every Saturday morning, I took 4 buses for a 2.5-hour bus ride to go to his house to meet with him. And he would spend the day with me. We'd read the book, and we'd start to go through the steps. He'd make me dinner, and then he would drive me back into Seattle. I had to show the effort by taking those buses and getting myself to him. But he was so gracious to work with me. And
how cool is that?
It was so cool. And he said, I think you got it, because by the time you got here, you were like 99% surrendered. Finally, you know, for years, I was the guy like, that's Tom. Don't do what he does. I was the good example of a bad example. And he told me this, you guys. He said, this is my job. God, meet Tom. Tom, meet God. And he said that we can be, sponsors tend to do 3 things. They tend to direct people toward meetings, so they're meeting-centered, toward the sponsor, so they're sponsor-centered, or to God, so they're God-centric. And that's what he did with me. That was probably the greatest gift. And I call him every day for years, really. One of the gifts he gave me was the honesty to say, no, I don't know. I don't know. You're going to have to ask God. And every time we'd meet, the first thing we'd do was we would do prayer and meditation, the way that it's taught in AA, in the 12x12, which just happened to be the way that I'd learned it 30 years before that.
So let me say this. Tom, give me a sec. On step 12, this is really what sums up the program. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, the result, the one and only result, as the result of these steps, we try to carry the message to the alcoholic and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So the one aspect of all the program is a spiritual awakening. And Gahiel Gibran said, spiritual awakening is the most essential thing in a man's life and is the sole purpose of being. So your sponsor did exactly what he was supposed to do. Now, a little plug on Rum Radio, I have an interview for a sponsor. And it's a way, and it's common sense stuff. Now, most of the time what we had to do is you had to hear someone say something in a meeting that resonated with you. He had a good handshake. He had a beautiful car. He had a beautiful girlfriend. He had something what you wanted. Of course, we didn't really know what we wanted, but that's what we were told. And, of course, it worked. You know, it worked for a lot of people because they're still here. It's the folks that didn't make it that it didn't work for. Those are the folks we never get to hear from. But anyway,
that's
go ahead,
right.
Tom. I'm sorry.
No, that's right. And so we went through the steps 4 times that first year.
Wow.
I was so sick. You know, it says, I like the adjectives the book uses. It doesn't say, many people do not realize the alcoholic is sick. It says, very sick. So that was me. So just peeling off those layers. And then, like about 6 months in, we went, you know, because we had a whole day together, we went through the book fairly quickly. So at about 6 months, he said, you're ready to start sponsoring people. Thank God I had not heard, although I met people I sponsored later who said, my sponsor told me, wait a year before you do the steps, then do one a year. It's like, I just thought, man, I would kill myself. I couldn't do that. So I started sponsoring, and you know what's interesting is in the times of sobriety, the periods of sobriety I had in those 18 years going in and out, it never occurred to me to sponsor anybody. It just never occurred to me. And so I started sponsoring, and I started doing what I heard Tom I say from North Carolina. It's like when somebody, I sat in the back row of my home group, and so I could see anybody new who came in, and I would just stick out my hand to them, not to get a sponsee, but just to welcome them, because so many times we form cliques in AA. Somebody comes in, they come in late, they leave early. Did they really experience the fellowship? And the answer is no, they didn't. So I sat in the back and I just introduced myself to people, and out of that, I started sponsoring people, and there were times in my first year or two when I was sponsoring 8 or 10 or 12 people at a time, active, going through the steps. Now, just like taking that 2.5 hour or 4 buses, 2.5 hour bus ride, I wasn't doing that out of virtue. I was doing that out of my own desperation. And then the gratitude that I have for getting really free for the first time in my life kept me going on. And so in sponsoring people, sometimes they say, well, I can't be like you. I can't sponsor 10 people at a time. And And I tell them, well, you don't have to be like me. You have to be like you. You have to find out what your limit is. Find out why you're here. Find out what your role is. We're in the world. Play the role God assigned. So God's the only one who can give me that assignment. For me, it was sponsorship. So over the last 7 years, I've probably sponsored 150 or 160 people. And I love doing it. And with some of them, like we had talked about earlier, Joseph, depending on the person, I'll take them through the steps very quickly, the way that it was done in the 40s and 50s in AA.
There you go.
Beginners meetings. And then I'll take them through the book from the title page to page 164. But if they're dying, they can't stop drinking or drugging, from day to day, I triage them. And I just took a guy through the steps twice in 4 months. He's sponsoring two people. And, you know, and if need be, I'll meet with them one long day a week or two or three times a week. And I think a lot of what I see in AA is, like you said, we get well and we just want to enjoy this great life and we forget to reach out to others. We forget to do what somebody did for me. And I've tried not to do that. Plus, it's just such a joy in watching the light come on for people. So, and, you know, I'm single. I've got all this time on my hands, and it's what I love to do.
You know, I call it, part of it is people in the program, they're excited initially because it's like a convert to a religion. To some, AA is like a disorganized religion, because they can't really come to an agreement of Jesus or Heavenly Father, or, you know, they might have, there's quite a few heathens, we have agnostics and atheists in there, and that seems to be more and more the general lay of the land. I think it's not because of recovery. I think this is just what the social order is devolving to. And AA is mirroring that social order. Elbowing God out.
Right.
You know, so it's not about we're doing it in AA, we're become a mirror of the society around us.
Right.
So, and then all of a sudden now they take a long time to get well, and they've gotten well to some degree. Now, there's no telling. I'm not everybody's judge in Zion, and, you know, if it's, you're staying sober, well, that's none of my business how you're doing it, because you're going to do it different than me anyway. So what I usually have found that people depend on the meetings and they languish in the meetings and they get a life. No, you know, of course, alcoholics will always say alcoholics are very intelligent people, but you'll only hear another alcoholic say that. You don't hear normies say, yeah, I hired him. He was an alcoholic because he was really smart. No, they're not going there. We say that about ourselves, but no, we're kind of a group alone. You know, we're smart. And then we get a life back, and we have a business, and we might find a wife or a girlfriend, and we get a car and a dog, and we have things to do now. And then meetings take a lot of time. So, you know, how about sponsoring? And they go, I just can't, but you're going to 5 meetings a week. I mean, can you cut it down to 2 or 3 and sponsor somebody? Well, I just don't have the time, and I get that all the time. I tell my sponsors, after step 5, you're available to be a temporary sponsor. So somebody said, well, temporary sponsors, you get a temporary recovery. I said, no, all sponsorship is temporary. It's either temporary for
good.
A day or temporary for a lifetime or anywhere in between. It's just an idea that when you go to the new guy, and if the new sponsor, when you tell him he's a temporary, it doesn't sound like he's locked in. And for the new guy coming in, temporary also has a good sound to it because it's don't fence me in. But it gets him going in the right direction, and that's really all you can do. And so I tell my sponsors, after step 5, you can be a temporary sponsor. Get the guy started. The only requirement is you got to stay one step ahead of them. Most won't do that. They're not going to do it. They're not going, oh, I have to work all 12 before I can do that. Okay, fine. Now you've made a commitment. You know, then it's still like pulling teeth because they don't feel adequate. They're afraid that if they make a mistake, somebody's going to die. Some of them are going to die anyway. They just don't want to be connected up to that problem. But the best chance you have is in the 12 and 12 on step 5. Until we've spoken with complete candor to someone, and they've done the same with us, we still didn't belong. Step 5 was the answer. It was the beginning of a true kinship between God and man. So it's asking us not only to speak a fifth step, but to hear a fifth step. Who hears a fifth step? A sponsor hears a fifth step. So until you've heard a fifth step, you still didn't belong. You were circling the field, waiting to run out of spiritual gasoline, and now it was another crash and burn. Now we've developed the spin dry cycle and the revolving door, and I think this is where AA is starting to come back around. I see a change coming. So now you got you're sponsoring guys, and that's great. Now you wrote a book. Now how long were you sober when you how long are you sober now, Tom?
7 years.
7 years, okay, great. And I wanted to get into the. Did you have anything else that you wanted to relate to us before we got into your book?
Well, I wanted to say one more thing about the fellowship and sponsorship.
Sure.
I think that sometimes we get some relief, and we mistake it for freedom, and then we do like what you said. Too busy to sponsor and. And one of the things that's been my guide is something, again, Tom I from North Carolina said. He said, when the things recovery gives me become more important than the things that gave me recovery, I'm in trouble. So, and the whole idea of the meetings, why are there meetings, Alcoholics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, whatever? The book only says one thing about meetings. It says we go to meetings so the newcomer might find the fellowship they seek. So if I'm sitting in a meeting and I'm ignoring the newcomer because I've got my posse, I think I'm missing the point. And again, if the essence of addiction is selfishness, that's the root of my problem, then becoming self-centered or self-absorbed in the fellowship is, to me, it's just untreated alcoholism, and it's what I was stuck in for 18 years. I just got to get here and make some friends. Well, that never kept me sober.
Yeah, that's Mike. That seems to be generally the lay of the land. I don't know if you know this. 1981, they did a census. Harold knows this. I tout it all the time. I couldn't believe it. I've checked it. Even had GSO verify the numbers. 1981, there was 2 million in the rooms. Counting cats. Okay, gotcha. They did another survey. How do you do it? How do you count cats? I mean, they're always coming and going. But they do. I saw the way they do it. Herd them, yeah, herding cats. What they do is they take the average group attendance. And that's how they number it. So it was 2 million in 1981. They did the next survey was in January of 2010. And same cat counters. Any guesses how many you think were in the rooms at the time?
Less.
No? Any guess?
I don't know, but less is my guess.
Well, no, flatline, 2,100,000.
Oh, wow. So it wasn't growing.
29 years later, the world population had increased by a full third. I couldn't believe it when I heard it. I even called the GSO. The GSO had people down here, and so I'm always banging out rum radio wherever I go. You know, they just love me for it. So I'm validating these numbers, and yeah, it's like they were in denial. I says, well, if we had 3 million, we would have flatlined. of course, you have all the churches with the 12 steps, and you have Celebrate Recovery and Rational Recovery, and, of course, the Singleness of Purpose is great, the CA and the NA, and so, you know, and then all of that, you know, the Christian movement has pulled some people away. And so my church, I've been trying to get AA into my church, and we have Jesus and Heavenly Father and it's our own 12-step program, which is evolving, and I could say that. And I've been trying to get them. I went right to the top of the food chain trying to pull this off, but they were not buying what I'm selling. And I asked them, I said, the 12 steps, I'm the odd duck no matter what pond I fly in. If the 12 steps are not a gift from God, why have you adopted them? And if they are a gift from God, why do you feel compelled to change them? Because they don't like when I ask them questions. Yeah, they don't like those kind of questions. Nobody likes those questions because the answers are too hard. But the question is the right question. The question is the correct question. You know, the good question, you don't need an answer with the right question. So
that's good.
This is the way I look at the program. Go ahead.
The whole thing you said about God, too, it's like I think the numbers are probably, if there was any way to quantify them, are the same. About half the people that come in are atheists or agnostic. And so when somebody is asking me for help and they say, but I'm staying away from the God deal, I don't believe in God. And I have two responses. One is, if you do these 12 steps the way they're designed, you will have an experience and come to know God. That's the common denominator, of course, in all of the stories in the back. My other response is, oh, yeah, you believe in God, but that's been you, and that got you here.
Ah, that's good. Well, if I have somebody like that, Jesus is my higher power, so it makes it easier if they're Christian. It always seems to gravitate that way. But if I do get an atheist or an agnostic, and prayer is part of the 12-step program, I'll, you know, still encourage them to pray. But if they don't know who to pray to, I just suggest to pray to whom it may concern. And that's sufficient. And that's sufficient to get them started. Harold was an atheist when he came in, and now, right, Harold?
Actually, agnostic.
Ah.
And my brothers and I had pretty mixed up ideas about the Bible. My mom was mixed up and so forth. But with the love of the fellowship, with their ability to say, let us love you until you can love yourself, and with the encouragement in the big book to pay attention to people who have a religious background, now I'm an avid student of the Bible and a follower of Jesus Christ.
That's amazing. Phil W. said that this was a spiritual kindergarten. And I've ran with that. I did a post, some of the best Christians I ever met were atheists. The atheist says there is no God and lives like there is one. The agnostic says there might be a God and lives like there isn't. So it's a good little post in there. You know, they do the next right thing because it's the next right thing to do. You know, if you always do the next right thing, it will surprise some and amaze the rest. And that's enough to get you started on this program. People evolve. So, you have to take them where you find them, but you don't have to leave them there. And they're supposed to progress. I'll tell you this, and then I'll shut up, and we'll get back to your book. It's in the big book, it says, our sobriety is contingent upon the maintenance of a daily spiritual condition. So my question is, what maintains itself of itself? Nothing I found. You're either growing spiritually or you're declining spiritually. And if you're declining spiritually, your recovery, and then certainly your sobriety becomes tentative. That's my experience.
Nobody coasts.
All right, you can't do it. I mean, we try. You can't. Pain is the touchstone of all spiritual growth. You can't be comfortable and grow spiritually at the same time. As much as we'd like for that to happen, it's not going to happen. And I call, you know, it's restless laurelitis again, you know, with the moldy laurel leaves. We go to the meetings are sexy, meetings are fun, I get to talk, I can audition, it's funny stuff, I don't have to do anything, I get to process, I get this program through the process of osmosis.
Right,
osmosis,
and I can breathe the fumes of other people's recovery and think it's be fooled into thinking it's my own.
My right, and I have all the words and I have all the phrases, and so now when people like that talk, or when I would talk before I worked the step, I had a good rap. I still got a great rap, but it's a good rap. But I didn't have the foundation. I didn't really do the work, but I had all the I could parrot the work.
Right.
And so, oh, wow, he knows his stuff, you know, and, you know, until, and that's why I did the interview. Okay, well, let's ask this guy a couple questions. Does he have a sponsor? Does he stress the steps? Does he stress the spiritual aspect of the program? What does that program look like? If he has to have one to share one. Is he available for telephone calls and meetings? And any other information that you feel that would be necessary to develop a dialogue? The sponsorship has to work for both the giver and the receiver, but it's good to have a little dialogue. The big book suggests that too. Have a dialogue of see if there's common goals and acceptance. Personality conflicts, we all have different personalities, and that's where you can't really cookie cutter this thing. Some people are going to gravitate towards different people. My experience.
Right.
So now we got a book, it's called Prayer and Meditation, which is step 11. On step 11 I did this. Prayer was the quarterback, meditation was the feedback, and self-examination is the goal line. Tell us about the book. I was looking at the book. I recommend it highly. It's a great primer for people in the program. It's all out of the big book understanding. So how did this book come about?
Well, after a few months, in sobriety this time, I knew I needed to do things radically different across the board. And so one of the first things I did that with my sponsor every week when we'd meet, we'd start to do prayer meditation. We'd do 5 minutes of meditation. We'd say a prayer that's become popular in the West Coast anyway, the set-aside prayer. God, please help me to set aside everything I think I know. And at first, that was threatening to me. It's like, but I know stuff. and he said, just set it aside. You don't have to throw it away. And so but I became hungry for more. And I heard a guy in my home group speak, John the Cop, we call him. And I heard him speak on step 11. And he said what he did in the morning was he got up, he said the third step prayer and another prayer. He read page 86 to 88. And then he did 30 minutes of writing. And so I said, well, I'll try that. And so I went home and I started incorporating that into my morning routine. And then I added the meditation the way it's described in the 12 by 12 and the 11th step. And then
right.
I did that for about a year and a half by myself. A couple people in my home group saw a change in me and asked me, a woman and a man asked me if they could come over to my house once a week and we could do prayer meditation together, which is the way that page 87 prescribes. The circumstances weren't, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation.
Right.
So they came over, and after 3 or 4 weeks, they asked if they could come over every day and do it. So every morning at 6 a.m., my home group met at 7, 6 a.m., we would meet at my house for prayer and meditation, and over time, a whole bunch of people started coming. Now, these first two, after 2 weeks of doing this every day, we would go to the home group afterwards, and people started coming up to them and said, what is different about you? You're changed. You're positive. You've got a smile on your face. And so right away, they began to see the fruit of it. And part of that, I think, is the synergy of, guess what, following the directions. And so it's designed to be done together. And so we began to see that grow. And then eventually we added an exercise that I got out of the book Back to Basics that Dr. Bob brought in to AA from the Oxford group, and that's the How to Listen to God exercise. And so in the morning, we do the third step prayer, seventh step prayer, maybe listen to some music. We do 5 minutes of meditation. We'd read 86 to 88 in a meditational way. And then we would do this exercise where we would ask God, God, what do you want to say to me today? And then we'd write for 10 minutes what we heard. And this was so effective in igniting people's relationship with God early on, brand new people. I remember this one guy came, and he came because I sponsored his sponsor, and his sponsor said, you really ought to try this out. So the first day he came, we do the 10 minutes of writing. We go around the room and share if you want to. And I said, you want to share what you wrote? And he goes, yeah, there is no God. And if there was a God, he wouldn't talk to us. This is ridiculous. Oh, okay.
And you
next.
Said, and you told him, look, hey, don't hold back. Tell us how you really feel.
But a month later, he came every day. A month later, Go around the room, Dave, do you want to share what you heard? And he said, I just wrote, God, would you go steady with me? Would you be my Facebook friend? So this guy woke up, right, on awakening. And so then we started doing little workshops and retreats. And I became aware that it's the only part of the 12 steps, to my knowledge, that it gives a template, a clear-cut instructions to do every single day. And I'll tell people, actually, you only have to do it on the days you plan on waking up, because it says on awakening. And then you only have to do it on the nights you plan on going to bed, when we retire at night. And so anyway, after a few years of doing the workshops and retreats, people started asking me if I'd write a book about it. And before I did, my adviso for if you're going to write something that's worthwhile is look to see if it's already been written. Samuel Johnson, the English writer in the 1800s, said,
yes,
I fear most writing is a willful conspiracy for the destruction of trees. So I looked online and Amazon and all the resources for books. There was a bunch of stuff written on Step 11, but none of it was faithful to our literature, our history, and our traditions. And so I finally put pen to paper and finished writing the book. And it's a how-to. It's not a large book. It's very practical. What prayer meditation isn't AA style, what it is, and then we just go through the problem, the solution, what prayer meditation is, how to improve conscious contact, and how to connect with other people to make this meaningful, like I think you said at the beginning, Harold, to have some accountability, not for their sake, but for my own sake. One woman came to a retreat. She'd had, it's in the story in the start of the book, Kathy's story, and she'd been in a head-on collision at 110 miles an hour and wasn't expected to live. She did live, but she had short-term memory loss. She had significant brain trauma. And through doing prayer and meditation, she got her short-term memory back. And now, every day, she lives in a remote area of the Northwest, but every day she will send out what she hears from God in the How to Listen to God exercise to 20 or 25 people whose lives are blessed by what she does, by her simple listening to God.
Terrific.
I love to hear those stories. They're inspiring.
Well, we had so many people wake up.
It shows God at work.
Yes. What's that?
It shows God at work. You could see, what they say, a coincidence is God incognito.
Yeah, and people began to hear and get clear-cut direction from God. One guy I took into my house, he'd ruined his marriage, his life. He was having to go to a mental hospital every day and they're outpatient just so he wouldn't kill himself. He moved in, he started doing prayer and meditation every day, and slowly his family got to be reassembled, and he began to hear from God. And one morning, he heard something I'll never forget. We went around for the sharing time, and this is all he heard God say that morning. Don't worry about the mess. We'll clean it up together. Another woman heard a name in her time of listening to God, asking God, what do you want to say? She hadn't heard from the woman or thought about the woman in over 10 years. The last thing she knew, this woman had gotten addicted to meth, stole a car, ran from the police, hit another car, and killed two people. And she'd been in prison for 9 years. So she found out where she was, and the direction was, contact her. She found out where she was. She wrote the woman a letter. The woman wrote back and said, this is a miracle. I've just been thinking of you and all of the times we spent together as kids at your house. And then a third person asked my friend, well, how do you know this woman? And she said, she told her the story and prayer and meditation and God spoken to her. And my friend asked the third woman, well, how do you know Michelle that's in prison? And the woman said, I'm her sponsor. I've been sponsoring her and visited her in prison for 9 years.
Wow.
So we wake up, you know, the 11th step. There's 11 prayers. There's 11 asks. So why would I ask you a question? How old are you, Joseph? Well, if you didn't tell me how old you were, then we didn't really communicate. So, you know, there's one piece of spiritual literature that says, my sheep know my voice. They hear my voice, right? So I live by that now because the 12 steps are principles, but they're like guardrails. And what I'm really after is what you said, Joseph. I'm after this spiritual awakening when I'm alive to God. And there's something, principles are like these guardrails that keep me on the road when I'm otherwise going to go into the ditch. Something that's richer than that, and that's this presence I can learn to practice and get my daily bread from and my direction for living. And so that's what I've outlined in the book is how to do that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I'm going to read the table of contents. There's a forward, endorsements for 11-step retreats, acknowledgments, dedications, the preface, first thoughts, Kathy's story, why does prayer and meditation matter, introduction, chapter one, what it's not. I like that. What it's not. What it is. What it is, the problem, the solution, seeking, prayer, meditation, improving conscious contact, knowledge of His will, the power to carry that out, how to listen to God, when we retire at night, putting it all together and getting started, measuring success, some prayers, Step 11 prayer exercise, some great quotes. Really well done. I mean, very well thought of. It's all out of the big book, folks. So this is it. This is a book that amplifies and qualifies the information. Dr. Bob was really big on, he said, the AA lost something when we lost our daily meditation on a regular basis.
Right.
Bill Wilson had a spiritual experience. We call it the burning bush, and it's funny because you could tell about the extent of the agnostic and the atheist coming in now. I know a lot of folks, they're big book thumpers, but they don't really believe that Bill had that kind of experience, even though it's there.
Right.
And I have another information from my own church that there's a parallel to his, and there's other parallels in the Bible to what Bill Wilson had, but they don't believe that really happened. They believe that this was just electricity, or he was on the third day of his detox, and that this was a form of a fantasy. What do they call
hallucination?
Something that came up, Thank you. It was an hallucination, all of that. They can't take it for what it is. And spiritually, I could tell you this, spiritually, the template is exactly the same. The darkness before the light, all of it, it's all there. He was really touched by the hand of God, but they can't come to that. They refuse to come to that understanding. Now, he had this tremendous white light. God touched him. And he knew it. Something happened. It was just huge to him. And he said good fortune followed him after that.
Yeah.
Dr. Bob.
It was just somebody flipping on the light. Why didn't Dr. Silkworth respond? Oh, somebody just turned on the light. But here's Dr. Silkworth, who's sane, who says in another, I think it's in, I can't remember which resource it's in, maybe A Comes of Age, he said, anything's better than what you've got. I don't understand it, but this is God.
Yeah. And Silkworth evidently was, it sounded like Silkworth was more of an agnostic.
Right.
Man of science or an atheist. Mm-hmm. So this was unusual for Silkworth to validate what happened to Bill. And that's what really, and Bill said, when he validated me, he said, then I knew, because it's scripturally, it is, in the mouth of the second witness, the matter was established.
Right.
Silkworth established what happened to Bill. Bill couldn't believe it, because that's not what Bill was. Now, Dr. Bob had Jesus. He read the Bible every day. He was, you know, he'd gone for the cure. He'd been prayed over and sliced and diced more than a Christmas turkey, and he couldn't get it. But he had the love of Jesus, and he had the Bible. Dr. Bob's had the awakening, which is line upon line, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little. My experience is that the spiritual experience will eventually dissipate in time. No matter how powerful that is, it will dissipate. And eventually, well, maybe not Paul, but eventually, if you don't keep up the program, if you don't keep up the trudge, which is a walk with purpose, shoulder to shoulder, if you don't keep doing the trudge, if you don't keep building on that spiritual experience, spiritual awakening, you're going to fall away, no matter how strong that experience was. And that's demonstrated. I'm going to write to this eventually. That's demonstrated by Bill's. Bill W.'s lack of spiritual growth towards the end.
Right.
Because he
Yeah,
go ahead.
That was my story before those 18 years of going in and out. You know, I got this tremendous spiritual awakening. I started going to this church. I started growing spiritually. And then I had this event happen, and I caved. I collapsed. And I would, of course, I left the fellowship of this church I was in shame, and with my head hung. And whenever I would run into people, I was the director of music and arts at the time, and then I just sort of slunk away. And I'd run into people after I relapsed, and they'd say, "What happened to you?" And I tried to avoid him, but this one guy cornered me, and he said that. He said, "What happened to you? You seemed like you were full of God." And the only answer I could come up with was this, Joseph. I said, I leaked. Just one day at a time, just what you said, it dissipated. I just leaked. I didn't stay full of God. And I didn't have the template of the 12 steps to stay clean and clear, not only with God, but with my fellows.
Excellent.
Yeah. Well, I've been around long. You didn't ask how old I was, but I've been around long enough to see that. You know, and that's how I come to know these things. Because I've been around, like my granddaughter said, "How do you know these things, Papa?" I got a library card, and it was hard. It was a hard-fought library card. So I've seen these things. I've seen them. I know. I could see it. And the most important thing you could do is to work the program one day at a time, on a regular basis, concentrating on progress and not perfection. And if you do that, you're thoroughly working our path. That's the thorough.
Yeah.
is to do
I
it.
If you stay around long enough, and we stay alive too, you learn stuff. It's, you know, that's a great answer for your daughter. Well, it's like, I stayed alive, I didn't die, and you just learn stuff, even by default.
Oh, if I'd only known when I was 25.
If I say that to Claire, she's going to come back with something. Oh, so you're going to be an old-timer eventually, huh? You didn't drink and you didn't die, huh? That's how you did it.
Yeah, okay. That's right.
Well, that's great. Now, where do I buy this book? How do I get a copy of this book?
You can go to the website, which is practicallyspiritualbooks.com, practicallyspiritualbooks.com, and you can order it there. You can get it on Amazon, on Kindle, or you can call me directly, and that would probably be the cheapest way for anyone to order. Can I give my number?
Oh, please.
Okay. It's 206-383-2965.
Again?
206-383-2965.
Okay. It's really good. I highly recommend it.
Just had the books about 2 weeks, and they've gone to probably a third of the states. I sent one to Mexico and one to Dubai already. So I guess the recovery is alive and well in Dubai.
Interesting.
How about that? You have an e-form too? Is a Kindle available?
Yes, it is. It's available electronically on Amazon.
Oh, okay, so if I go to Amazon and I put in prayer and meditation, it should pick me up.
Plus Tom R. That'll bring you to it.
Tom R. Okay, on Amazon. Okay, great. I mean, that's the way to go right now. If you remember Ghostbusters, which one he said, print is dead. It's really about electronic media. I think really is the wave now. You know, it just is. But this
Do you
is
read
nice,
e-books?
Though. This is
I like the paper.
No. You know, well, I'm older, yeah. So, yeah, the e-book.
I got a library card.
Yeah, really. Yeah, I know. It's something about a feel of a book. It just, in the print, it's like it's personal, where the e-book just seems like it's, I don't know, alien. It's an alien,
yeah.
It's an alien life form.
That's right.
You know, I could always imagine the guy had the last buggy whip shop, and he's going, I know the horseless carriage is just a fad. I know it.
Exactly.
You know, and this
You'll
is where
see.
We're at. You know, they call this time the quickening. Have you ever heard the term?
No, I haven't.
It's a sign of the last days, the end of times, when men's knowledge grows exponentially. Sounds familiar, though. I mean, we're going pretty quick here. I mean, you buy any electronic, 2 weeks later, it's an antique. You know, like, hey, wait a minute, I just bought this thing. Oh,
yeah,
we got the better one, and if you want to be on the in crowd, you better get the new one here.
Got
it. Okay, so that's great. Any last words, Harold?
Well, I went to the website. It's a very nice-looking website, nice pictures of Tom and his books. And so this is really great. It's been a great program. I've really enjoyed our interactions, and I appreciate you, Tom, for being here, for your tenacity. And we have similar backgrounds. In the 60s and 70s and all the LSD and other things. So I've really enjoyed touching base, and I'm glad you're in recovery. I'm glad I'm in recovery. Thanks, Tom.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
God
you're
bless.
You're welcome. You know, you were mentioning about the LSD. I remember I had a buddy of mine back in the day, and he did a lot of acid, a lot. And he said, I think I've lost my mind. I said, what are you going to do? He says, I'm going to drop some more acid just to make sure.
I used to have a pin I put on my T-shirt back then that said, LSD did this to me.
That's funny.
It's funny. All right, so thanks again, Tom. We enjoyed it. If you have any need for prayer and meditation, which is part of the program of recovery. So this is a set, and I noticed in the book, too, it also had a 10-step where you can go through your 10-step inventory. Remember, step 10 are steps 4 through 9 in a package taking in the present. So when we do step 10, we're actually covering steps 4 through 9. 4 and 5 is about the past. 6 and 7 is ongoing, so is 3. We give it up, take it back. 6, entirely ready, so nobody's ever, you just become a little bit more ready on and off. 7, humility, we're turning it over to God. 8's really in the past. 9 might take a lifetime or it's done. But 10 and 11 and 12 are the growth steps. And 10, I hear people go, well, I'm doing the whole steps again. It's not necessary unless it's something in the past. Otherwise, 10, done on a regular basis, should be sufficient. And what I've learned is on 10, quickly admitted when we were wrong. You know why? It's always easier to eat crow while it's still warm.
I like it.
Thanks again, Tom.
You're welcome.
In closing, I'd like to say rumradio.org is we're in 151 foreign countries, including Mississippi. 2,800 towns, cities, and villages. I forget myself. And over 3,000, probably over 400,000 hits to the website. It's all over the world. We're even in Nepal. We're very popular in Nepal. They enjoy our yak. We really are very popular in Nepal. India GSO has befriended us on Facebook. So did the European GSO.
Wow.
So they're moving it out. Sponsorship is really the key. I think this is a pendulum swing for the program, and I think this is going to help us get on track. Any new ideas first met with ridicule, then violent opposition. I've been violently opposed, no doubt. And eventually, when the violent opposition passes away, acceptance is being self-evident. So, for the folks that can't accept this and they violently oppose it, we wish you a speedy and a glorious withdrawal. Anyway, so thanks again, guys, and God bless. And remember, we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org. Good night.
Good night.